The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
This week's Parashas are Parashas Matos and Masse. At the end of Parashas Matos, we have the story of the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuben in Katzi Shevet Menashe. The Torah tells us, this is in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Aleph, U'mikne Rav hoya livnei Reuben v'livnei Gad otzu mi'od. And the tribe of Reuben and the tribe of Gad had an enormous amount of cattle and sheep. Where did they get all this from? The previous parshas, subjects in the Torah, deal with Sroras HaMidyonim, where Kodesh Baruch Hu commanded Israel to take revenge from the Midyonim because of what they did together with Bilam against Klal Yisrael. So they went and they conquered, they wiped out the nation of Midyon, and they took the spoils. So from these spoils, the Bnei Reuben and Bnei Gad ended up with a great deal of cattle and sheep, an enormous amount. Now this was all taking place on the east side of the Jordan. Klal Yisrael had not entered into Eretz Yisrael yet. The fact is, all during the Chumash, Israel does not enter into Eretz Yisrael as a whole, because Moshe was not allowed to go into Eretz Yisrael. So they were still on the east side of the Jordan River, and they were in the land which was known as the land of Sichon Melech Amori and Og Melech HaBoshim. These were the two kings that occupied this territory, that went to war against Israel, and Moshe defeated them. And this was referred to in the Torah as Eivar HaYarden, the other side of the Jordan, once they came into Eretz Yisrael. And they saw this land, and this land was called Yazer and Gilod. It had various cities in various areas, and they saw that it was a land which was wonderful for the cattle and sheep. It was good pasture land. So they came to Moshe and to Elozer, princes, and they said, all of this land, Atoris, Diva, and Yazer, Nimra, Cheshba, and Al-Elu, all of this land which HaKadosh Baruch Hu let us conquer, this is all cattle land. And your servants, we have a great deal of cattle. If you will agree to it, then please allow us to stay here, and we will not cross the Jordan River, and we'll settle here. And Moshe, when he heard this, became very suspicious. This didn't sound good to Moshe, because it sounded like they were coming and saying that, why do we have to go into Eretz Yisrael? We have good land right here, so we'll wait here, and we'll live here. And Moshe became quite upset, because this is also similar to what the Meraglim, what the spies said. They said, let's not go into Eretz Yisrael. We'll stay here, or we'll go back to Egypt. So Moshe said,
all of your brethren are going to cross the Yarden and go fight. And they had a big war ahead of them, because they were the seven great and mighty nations of the Knanim that occupied Eretz Yisrael. There were 31 malochim, 31 kings, and they had a very, very great war ahead of them. He said, your brothers are going to go into the land, and you will stay here. And not only that, but you also will undermine the confidence of your brethren in regards to inheriting and conquering the land which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them. And this is what your fathers and your forefathers did by Nachal Eshkol, when we came from Har Sinai. Klal Yisrael went out of Egypt, and they were by Har Sinai 49 days later. They received the Torah, and then they stayed there for a year. And then they were supposed to go into Eretz Yisrael, and the same thing happened. And because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't allow that whole generation to go, and he became angry at them, and for 40 years we wandered in this desert until that whole generation died off, and now we're finally about to go into Eretz Yisrael again, and you're going to do the same thing. So they said like this, they said, no, you have us wrong, we're not, heaven forbid, we're not trying to discourage Klal Yisrael to go into Eretz Yisrael, and heaven forbid, we're not saying that we will not join in the fight. Now Gidrei say nivne lemikneinu po, we will build stables and we will build farms for our sheep and our cattle here, and orim letapenu, and we will build cities here for our children. Vanachnu necholetz chushim livnei bnei Yisrael, and we will go with our brethren across the Yarden to fight with them. Now, not only did they say we will go, they said livnei bnei Yisrael. They were good soldiers. Bnei Reuven and Bnei Gad were good soldiers. They were strong. They said we will go in the front before them. Ad asher imavi onam num el mekemon v'yoshav tapenu borei amitzor mibnei yeshvei haoretz, and we will stay with them until everything is settled, and our children will be in the fortified cities that we will build here. Le'noshuv el botenu ad isnachel bnei Yisrael ish nachlosei, and we will not return to our houses until everyone has inherited and settled his land on the other side of the Jordan. Ki lo ninchal ito me'ever le'yadin v'holo ki vol nachloseinu eleinu me'ever le'yadin mizrocho. We will not take a portion on the west side of the Jordan. Instead, we will take our portion here on the east side. So Moshe now heard this. This was a different story. So he said, all right. Im tasun es hadavar hazeh, if you will do this. Im techolsu lifnei Hashem la'milchama, if you will go fight with HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the war, and you will cross the Jordan armed, and you will drive out the enemy, and the land will be conquered, and then you will go back here, you will come back here, Yisem Nikim Me'Hashem Yisrael, then you will have a clean slate from Hashem and Israel, and this land shall be yours. But if you will not do this, then you have not kept your word, and it's a very, very great aveira. Now, actually, they undertook to do even more than Moshe wanted them to do. Moshe mainly said that they have to go and fight, and they have to help conquer the land, and only then can they return. They said, not only will we go fight, but we'll go first. We will lead the army. That's one thing. Secondly, they said, Moshe said that they should go fight, and once the land is conquered, then they can return. They said, we will not return until the land is settled. It took Yeshua 7 years to conquer the land, and another 7 years to settle the land and to divide it up. And they said, no, we'll even do more. That not until our brethren have settled the land, it's all divided, then we will return. So they said even more. Then they said something else. They said that we will build stables and corrals here for our cattle and sheep, and we will build fortified cities for our children. Now they spoke of taking care of the cattle and sheep first, and then the children. Moshe turned it around. He said, "Bunu lachem orim letapchem ugderes leseinachem." He says, "You have to make the ikar ikar and the tofel tofel. Build first cities for your children. Forget about your cattle and sheep. First build for your children, and then build for your cattle and sheep." Then he said, "Vayetzim mipichem tasu, and whatever you say with your mouth you must fulfill." So there, Rashi tells us that Moshe was saying, my conditions are simpler. You have undertaken even greater conditions. Well, what you owe me, you have to fulfill what I said. But the greater conditions you undertook, that you owe HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's like a vow. So therefore he said, "Va'yetzi mipicham ta'asu," that you shall do even not only what the conditions I've laid down, but even the conditions that you have undertaken on your own. So they said, "We'll do this. We'll do whatever you do." Now they turned it around. Tapeinu nosheinu miknenu v'chol bemteinu yishon bori anigilot, our wives and our children, and all of our sheep, cattle and sheep, they will be here in this city, in these cities, and we will go across, and we will fight, and we will lead, and we will not return here to inherit until the land is all conquered and the land is all settled. Then, near the end, it states, "Vayiten lehem eshel ibnei Gad ibnei Reuven lechatzi shevet Menashe ben Yosef." Moshe gave to the children of God, Reuben, and to half of this tribe of Menashe, ben Yosef, Mamlecha Sichin Melech HaMeri vs Mamlecha Seg Melech HaBoshem. These lands which belong to Sichin and Og, he gave them, but on the condition that they fulfill what we spoke about. Now, interesting, here is introduced a new person now, and that is Menashe, Chatzi Shevet Menashe. He wasn't mentioned before, he's only mentioned here in the end. And there's a question as to why. The commentators want to know, why is he coming in at the end of the picture and not in the beginning? Some feel maybe because they didn't know if there was enough land for all of them here. And it was only near the end when they saw there would be even enough land for others. So then, Chatzi Shevet Menashe, half the Shevet of Menashe also joined. So this concisely is the story. And Moshe knew that he will not be around when they conquer the land and to see that all of these conditions were kept. So he appointed a Mamuni, he appointed someone to be in charge. And these were the conditions that were laid down. Incidentally, besides the whole story, the Gemara learns out many halachas, many laws from here. And this is the source where we learn out Tanai, that a person can make a contract, an agreement, subject to conditions. When it comes to monetary laws and so forth, that a person has a power to join an agreement, two parties can join the agreement, but subject to conditions. And if those conditions are fulfilled, then the agreement stands. If not, then the agreement becomes invalid. This is its source. Now, we find that this is what happened. Can you give me a Yeshua, please? Is it there? In Sefer Yeshua, after Moshe died, and now it was Yeshua's job to conquer the land, so it states in Yeshua Perek Vov, Pasuk Tes, the first city that they went to war against was Jericho, and there they crossed the Jordan, they went to Jericho, and they started to march around the city. So it states in Perek Vov Pasuk Tes, "Ve'acholutz helech lifnei haKohanim teke haShofaris," that the Kohanim went first, and they were blowing shofaris. But in front of the Kohanim went the Hecholutz, went a certain armed division. Who? Now Rashi explains who was this armed division that went first. Neiruvim neigor haya evrim lifnehem. It was the children of Reuben and Gad. The fish, here he brings, because they were very strong. And this is why they went first. But also, the reason why they went first is because this was the condition that they had made. And they fulfilled that condition. And then in Yeshua, Perek Chof Beis. Near the end of Sefer Yeshua. Many years had passed of fighting, of conquering, of settling. And then it states, "O Zikri Yeshua." It came to the end of the war, and Yeshua was getting old. And he said, Yeshua called Rubeni, La Rubeni, Valagodi, Valachatzim, Matei, Menashe. He called to Reuben and Gad and half of the tribe of Menashe, Vayim Alehem. Atem Shemartem, Eis Kol Asher Tzivu Eschem, Meshever Hashem. You have guarded scrupulously everything which Moshe, the servant of Hashem, has commanded you. Matishma bekeli lechol asher tzivi yisi eschem. Le'azavtem es achechem ze yomim rabim. You didn't forsake your brethren for all of these days, Arahimazia. And you were scrupulous about keeping your conditions, that you would not forsake your brethren until the entire Eretz Yisrael was conquered. And now, God, who has given us peace and rest, and the war is over, and the division of the land is over, go back to your homes now, to the land which you have chosen to inherit, which Mesha, the servant of Hashem, came to give to you on the other side of the Jordan. So we see that they fulfilled their condition, their promise, and they ended up on the other side of the Jordan in that great pasture land like they wanted. Now, it seems very good. Everything is good. However, we have in Divrei Hayomim Divrei Hayomim Aleph Perek Hei Pasuk Chof Vav. Divrei Hayomim is Chronicles. That's where all the chronological events are listed. When Melech Ashur, the king of Ashur, came to drive Israel into Golus, it states, "Vayoyer Elokei Yisrael Esruach Pul Melech Ashur Esruach Tilgas Pul Neser Melech Ashur Vayadleim Veruveni Velagodi Velachapula Velachatsi Shevet Menashe." The first people, the first tribes, to go into Golus, to be exiled from their places, were these three tribes: Reuven, Gad, and half of the tribe of Menashe. And Rashi, with the Chazal, denote this, and this took place many years before the rest of Israel was driven out of Eretz Israel. They were the first ones that luscious pasture land they lost. The Mikne Rav, the enormous herds of cattle and sheep, they lost. And they were driven into exile years before the other tribes of Israel. And King Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, made note of this in Mishlei. He writes in Mishlei, Perekhov Posukhov Aleph, says, Nachlo Mivhaileles Borishem. He who inherits with a Baholo, with a great rush, he who inherits with a great rush first, Achriso Leisevorech. But his end is not blessed. What is he referring to? He who inherits with a great rush first, his end is not blessed. So the sages say he's referring to this story. Someone who goes forward to take first. He wants the first piece of the cake. Like God and Reuven. They rushed to take their portion on the other side of the Jordan before Eretz Yisrael was conquered and before it was being handed out, bibaholo, and with a great rush, like we see, they even said that we will build, give it to us right away, and we will build for our cattle and sheep and cities for our children. And they were in such a rush to take all of this wealth that they were even prepared to first take care of their cattle and then their wives and children. So you'll find that the end is not so blessed. Shegolu kamo shonim kedem shara shvotim. When it came to going into exile and losing the land and losing all of the wealth, they went many years before the others. Kemeshim aforish b'seder olam. Like it's explained in Seder Olam. Incidentally, so this posuk, when King Solomon wrote it, he had in mind this story. Incidentally, from whatever the Chazal write, especially like King Solomon, we can learn principles in many, from many things. And the Gaon, the Vilna Gaon writes that we can learn also in regards to the studying of Torah. He says, "Nachla mevohelas borishena." A person that does something with a great hurry and a rush. He says, when someone does work, and he does it with a great hurry and rush, so what is his interest? His interest is to finish it. Wants to finish one, two, three. So he's hurrying and he does it quickly, and in as time goes on, he even hurries more. So that's not a good way to do things. It's not a good way to do things, to do something to finish it. And then it will not be blessed. So he says this refers to many things, but within the Torah, it refers to Torah. A person who's learning a Sefer, or is learning a Masechta, of Gemara, and when he starts it, his main concern is to finish it. And who bowl the Sayyama Sefer, Vyamaya Ma'ed. A person who takes a Sefer, takes a Gemara, and he's in a hurry, he's in a rush. So what does he want to do? He wants to finish it. He opens up a Masechta Gedushin, he wants to finish it. He opens up Masechta Shabbos or Sanhedrin, he wants to finish it. Takes Mishnah, so another Sefer, takes a Sefer Chofetz Chaim and Mesilas Yesharim, he wants to finish it. So, Achrisa Le'Yevorech. Now the end will not be blessed. Sheba, why? Because Sheba, his main concern is not to study it. His main concern is to finish it. Sheba Chris leyod afas kolosa. And when he finishes it, he won't even know the beginning. Not only he won't even know the end, he won't even know the beginning. When a person opens up a piece of Gemara, or a Mishnah, or a Sefer, he has to concentrate on learning what he's learning, not be preoccupied with finishing it. Because if he's preoccupied with finishing it, then he's learning bebehola, he's learning with an enormous rush, and he rushes through it, and then he won't know it. If he concentrates on learning what he's learning it, he'll finish it in the proper time, and he'll know it. So he says this also is what King Solomon is referring to, nachlo mevoheles berishena, someone who goes after his nachlo, an inheritance, with a great rush. So then, v'achrisa le'sevorach, the end will not be so blessed. At any rate, in particular, this is referring to our story. Now, we must give some thought as to what did the Bnei God, Bnei Reuven, Bnei God, and Chatzi Shevet Manasseh, what did they do wrong? They came to Moshe with a very, very good and fair undertaking. They fulfilled the entire undertaking. So what did they do wrong? And why wasn't it blessed what they did? Yeshua told them at the end of days there, he says, you scrupulously guarded everything that you uttered from your mouth. Now go in peace back to your cities. Perhaps we'll say, because they chose not to take Eretz Yisrael, but rather Chutz La'aretz, outside of Eretz Yisrael. And that would have been a great Aveira. This would be an enormous Aveira. Here they have now, Kodesh Baruch is giving them Eretz Yisrael. And they're exchanging it for New York City, or for Muesenberg. This you can't say. Can't say that. Because Moshe would have never agreed to such a thing. Moshe would have never allowed it. And they wouldn't have done it either. But we see that's what they did. This was Moshe's concern. He said, what, are you going to become a Raglim again? We're going to go over the whole story. We finally finished the 40 years. And this new generation, you're going to start over again. I what they did. They exchanged on the other side of the Yarden for Eretz Yisrael. The answer is, to this, is no. What kind of halacha does Emir HaYarden have? This is that Moshe conquered. These empires of Sichon and Og. What kind of halacha is it? Is that Chutz Loretz or Eretz Yisrael? In other words, this was not promised to Moshe. This was not the land which was promised to Abraham and to Yitzchok and to Yaakov. But as they were going to conquer, they had to go through this land. And these kings came out to stop them and to fight with them. So there was a war, and they won. And in a war, the winner takes all. So they took it. So what kind of law does this have? We find in Halacha that land had a din of Eretz Yisrael. For example, when it came to Kedushas Oretz, the sanctity of the land, or when it came to Chumas and Maestros, how can we tell if a land is Eretz Yisrael or not Eretz Yisrael? So the Gemara tells us, if when you plant crops, you require from the Torah to bring Truma, we're learning in the Gemara now. See? That means that a certain portion you have to give to the Kohen, otherwise you can't keep the crops, eat the crops. Or a certain portion you have to give to the Vim, the Miser. Or you have to give Chamor. All of the Chumas u'Maisras. And this is because of the Kedushas Oretz. Then that land is Eretz Yisrael, it's Kodesh. If you do not have to give Chumas u'Maisras Min HaTorah, then that land is not Eretz Yisrael. Water brings many times there was certain areas that they were in doubt. They didn't know if you had to bring or not. In other words, they were in doubt whether it was part of Eretz Yisrael or not. But now Allah is all of Eber HaYarden, all of this land. In HaTorah you bring Chumas and Maestros. So we see that it was Kodesh, it was sanctified and had the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. It was not in the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael though. It was not the land which was promised to Abram, Yitzchok and Yaakov. The answer to that is a Sifri. That is brought at the end of Parshas Ekev, and the Rabban elaborates on it. At the end of Parshas Ekev, that's in Devarim Yud Aleph. Right at the end, Morim Yud Aleph Posuk Chof Dalet states, "Kol Hamokam Asher Tidrei Kaf Rag Lechem Bo Bei Lechem Yiyeh." Every place where you shall set the heel of your foot, that shall become yours. Min Habinbor, Min Hamidbor VeHalvonen. Then it states, from the desert to Levonen, Min Hanor Nar Pros VeHayom Ha'Achrein. From the river of Pras until the western sea, that's the Mediterranean, Yegvulchem, this shall be your boundaries. So the Sifri asks, it's contradictory. It states, wherever you put your foot, that will be yours. So there are no limitations. And then it states limitations. From the desert to the Levonim, from the Nor Pras until the western sea. So the Sifri explains that there are two types of Eretz Yisrael. There's Eretz Yisrael, which was called Nachlas Oves, or Nachlas Shiva. Eretz Yisrael, which belonged to the seven nations of Canaan, and which were Nachlas Oves promised to Abraham, Yitzchok, and Yaakov. And then there's another Eretz Yisrael, which is called Nachlas Kibush, land which you conquer and annex. Now, land which you conquer and annex, wherever you put your foot, that's Eretz Yisrael. If it's done in accordance to the rules laid down by the Torah. That's Nachlas Kibush, that's Eretz Yisrael, through conquering it. Min HaMidbor, but from the desert to the sea, to the Lavonan, from the river to the sea, that's Nachlas Shiva, that's Nachlas Oves, that's the land which I promised your forefathers. So Eretz Yisrael has two dimensions.
the Eretz Yisrael proper, which was promised to Klal Yisrael.
And Eretz Yisrael, which you annexed through conquering it.
Both become Kodesh. And both have the same sanctity.
And both you're obligated to bring Trumas and Maestros.
That's why the B'nai Godim, B'nai Reuven,
had a good case. Had they come and they said, look, we have a lot of cattle.
Texas we want,
rather than Eretz Yisrael.
Maestros wanted to listen to them. But they said, no,
we're not asking for Texas, we're asking here for Eved Hayadin, and this is Kodesh.
This is going to become sanctified just like Eretz Yisrael. And it'll be Kodesh,
and there'll be Trumas and Maestros. This is a part of Eretz Yisrael. This is Kol Mokom Asher Tidrachu
Vayikach Raglecha. This is what the Torah said. Wherever you put your
foot down to conquer, this will be annexed to Eretz Yisrael. So Moshe said, all right,
you have a good case.
Except you're going to let your brothers go and fight and you'll stay here. All right, so they came to the agreement.
See? So therefore they were not
forfeiting, heaven forbid, their inheritance in Eretz
Yisrael for an inheritance whose lords? They were merely waiving their right for Nachlas Shiva, for that which was of the seven nations, Nachlas Oves, given to the Oves for Nachlas Kibush.
Now,
so now we can understand at least what they were doing.
Good, but then what's then it's difficult from the other aspect.
But what was wrong with them?
Why was the end not blessed?
So on that, the sages explain
that even though
Nachlas Kibush, what is annexed, is sanctified and is like
Eretz Yisrael, but there's still a small dimension
of sanctity more
in Eretz Yisrael proper.
In Eretz Yisrael proper, there is still a small measure of sanctity
more in the land which was promised to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov.
And what were they doing?
They were sacrificing that for money. See?
This is what I say to students. They were sacrificing that for money.
Why did they want to? Why did they want Eved Yarden? Because it was good for cattle. All right, it was good for cattle. But Eretz Yisrael proper is better for
Kedusha, for sanctity. They were sanctifying this for money.
And this is why they rushed into it and to want to take
this slice of the pie first.
In doing so, they actually did three things, it's explained. Firstly,
they waived their right to take an Eretz Yisrael proper.
Secondly, they separated themselves from the rest of the brothers. All of Klal Yisrael went to Eretz Yisrael proper on the other side of the Jordan, and they stayed on this side.
So they were prepared to separate themselves from the rest of their brethren.
Why? Because they had a lot of cattle. Again,
for money, for material possessions. And thirdly, we see they were so preoccupied with this material possession is that they forgot about their wives and children. They said, we will build
corrals and ranches
stables
for our cattle and sheep, and we will build cities for our wives and children.
It shows you what was in their mind.
Now we see what
direction they were going. They had conquered in
this war with the previous war. They ended up with an enormous amount of spoils
of cattle, and then they became very, very wealthy.
But that wealth got out of proportion with them.
All of a sudden, because they became so wealthy,
all right, so we won't go into Nachlas Ovis, so we'll stay in Nachlas Kibush. It's also Eretz Yisrael.
All right, so we won't be together with our brothers. We'll be on the other side of the river,
but we'll have our cattle.
Okay. All right, so we'll take care of our cattle first, and our wives and children secondly.
So what their Aveira was, the Chazal called Chemdes HaMomon, that they were blinded by material possessions. They were blinded by money. And when a person becomes blinded by money, it's all of a sudden he has one priority in life. That's money.
Everything else falls in place
behind it. He has one priority, and that's
to gain and to acquire
and to collect
material possessions.
Everything else falls behind it. And we see this. We see it all of the time.
Especially in our Western culture.
All of a sudden, in this case, so it won't be Eretz.
So it doesn't have to be Eretz Yisrael at 100%. What's the matter
with Eretz Yisrael at 99.5%?
But why are they sacrificing that 0.5% for the cattle? Alright, so we won't live with the brothers. We're willing to cross this Yarden and live on the other side for the cattle. And we'll take care of the cattle.
Then we'll take care of our children and our wives. You see this happen all of the time.
And that's called Chemdes HaMomon.
The person becomes drunk with the pursuit of material possessions
to the point where all priorities become distorted.
The Midrash tells us,
the Midrash of this parsha tells us,
it's in the Medrash Parshas Chof Beis Eish Ches. It says, Mikne Rav Hoye Leile Bnei Ruven Bnei God. They had a great deal of cattle. It says, Leiv Chochem Liyamina Veleiv Ksil Lishmol. The wise person's heart is on his right side. The fool's heart is on his left side. What does this mean? Eile Bnei Leiv Chochem Liyamina. The one who has his heart on his right side, this is Mesha. The ones who have their hearts on the left side, these are Bnei Reuven and Bnei Gad. She also has a ikur tofel ves a tofel ikur. She chivu ves b'meinim yesem in anafoshes. They made the main priority money, and secondary they made lives, because they said, first we'll build for our cattle and sheep, and then we'll build for our children. Maisha told them, you're distorting the priorities, you're confused. First build for your wives and children, and then build for your cattle. And Aleihem Ne'amar, and on them it is said, they bring the posuk which we said from Mishlei, Nachla Mevaheles Barishena, he who rushes in to acquire possessions, in the end he will not be blessed, like we see from Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven.
What does it mean, right side, left side?
A person has a right hand and a left hand. Why is one stronger than the other? What he wants to do, he does with his right hand.
The left hand assists.
Right hand, he does what he wants to do, and the left hand assists. Therefore, the right hand is stronger, and the left hand is weaker. The wise man...
So his heart is on the right side. In other words, he does with the right hand what he's supposed to be doing, the most important. And with the left hand, he assists. And the fool is just the opposite. The fool does what's least important.
And he turns it around.
Moshe, we find by Moshe Rabbeinu, when everyone, when they were going out of Egypt that night, and everyone was going into the houses of the Egyptians to amass wealth,
they were supposed to take with them whatever they could. So it says, where was Moshe?
Moshe was looking for mitzvahs. He wasn't looking for wealth, he was looking for
mitzvahs. He was looking for the casket of Yosef, because Klal Yisrael
had concealed the casket of Yosef, because they knew that Israel would take Yosef up with them, and so they concealed it. So Moshe was trying to find the casket of Yosef. He was interested in mitzvahs. So he had put first things first and second things second. A person was given money in this world in order to serve Hashem. So Moshe was interested in serving Hashem. His heart was on the right side. By the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, people were given money in order to feed the nefashos, in order to feed people with. They put, the first should have come, their wives and children, that should have been their first concern, and then the money. Their heart was on the left side. They forgot what was important and what was unimportant. And first they were involved in caring for their cattle, and then their families. Were the cattle given for the sake of the families, or were the families given for the sake of the cattle? And they were caring for their cattle firstly, and then their families. So here we see what they were doing. Now there's another medrash. The medrash also here, Os Zayin. The medrash states, "Lemi meitzi umimarav." This is a pasuk in Tilam. "Lemi meitzi umimarav, lemi midbar horim, kelekim shefet." A person does not make wealth when even he crosses the sea, or if he goes all the way to the west, he doesn't make wealth. Or if he goes into the desert of the mountains, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who gives him the wealth. When he goes on business from one end of the world to the other, that's not what makes him money. Or even if he goes into the most obscure places, where does he become wealthy from? He becomes wealthy when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give him wealth. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he takes wealth from one and he gives to the other. Omer Shimon Mechalavto. Shimon Mechalavto, there was a matronusa, there was a noble woman that asked Rav Shimon Mechalavto, "How long did it take the Almighty to create the world?" He said, 6 days. "Now that he created the world, what does he do?" So it says, "Omale yeshe veise sulames." HaKadosh Baruch Hu is preoccupied now with making ladders. So she asked him, making ladders. What does Hashem make ladders for? He makes ladders because lezer, male lezer, umeri lezer. He makes ladders so he can bring this person from the bottom up and the other person from the top down. HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes the wealth of the world and he manipulates it. One day or one year this person has it, and another day or another year another person has it. Teda, Hashem wanted when Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuben, Chatzi Shev and Menashe, were to become wealthy. How did they become wealthy? They became wealthy off the wealth of the Midianites. He threw down the Midianites and the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuben became wealthy from there. Now, so therefore, in Tehillim, it's telling us, it says, it's not the person's pursuit, and it's not the person's aggressiveness that's going to make him wealthy. Naturally, everyone has to work, but that's not what's going to make him wealthy. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shefet, he judges the people, and he gives them wealth. And therefore, Dovid HaMelech also said, Mishlei Chov Gimel Dalet, David HaMelech said, "Al tiga lahashir." This is something very important, especially for young people growing up. For everyone, but for young people growing up, he said, "Al tiga lahashir." He says, "Don't work too hard. Don't knock yourself out to become wealthy." Very important.
person has to work. It's interesting. When they interviewed about a year ago, they wrote a big story on the Reichmans. The Reichmans are the wealthiest Jewish family in the world. And they're a Fruma family, a Dati family. Not only are they the wealthiest Jewish family in the world, but they're one of the wealthiest families in the world. So when they interviewed them and they asked them, how do you make so much money? Worth not millions, but billions of dollars. How do you make so much money? What's the secret? And he didn't know what to answer. What's the secret? The business empire is so complex with the entire world. What's the secret? So he just smiled and he said, well, maybe it's because we don't try too hard. That's what he answered. We don't try too hard. I told this to another big businessman, and he nodded his head. He says, yeah. He says, that's the secret. We don't try too hard. Now, what does he mean? And this is Shlomo HaMelech's secret. This is what Shlomo HaMelech said. Shlomo HaMelech said, Al tiga lahasher. Don't try too hard to become wealthy. Don't knock yourself out to become wealthy. Now, work, you have to work. Reichmans work. They put in a good day's work. But don't overdo it. Don't try too hard. Why? Because hasoif einecho bayveinenu. Because you'll work yourself to the bone to amass wealth. You'll close your eyes. When you open it, it'll disappear. It's not there anymore. In other words, you'll turn around one day and you find it's gone. Your wealth will get wings, and will fly away. Don't kill yourself trying to become wealthy, because you can work for years and years and years and give up your health and give up your peace of mind and sacrifice your family and your children, and you can sacrifice Torah and you can sacrifice mitzvahs. Like you see people do, they become so blinded and drunk with chemnes amomen that it's important to have this car, and after that a better car, and then the best car, and then two of the best cars, and three of the best cars, and then the best home, and then two homes, and then three homes, and then one ship, and another ship, and on and on and on. And Shlomo HaMelech said it's not worth it. Why? Because one day you can blink and open your eyes and it's gone. He said your wealth will grow wings and it will fly away like the eagle or the Eif HaShemayim, the birds of the heavens. So he says, Al tigo, don't knock yourself out. Yes, work hard, you must. That was the curse that was given to man. You have to put in a hard day's work. But don't dagger too much. Don't worry about it. Don't knock yourself out for the wealth. Now, what does this mean? This means because the wealth belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he gives it to who he wants to give it to. And he takes it away from he who he wants to take it away from. See? If it was Hefke, if it was ownerless, and it was first come, first serve, and once you put your stake, you staked your claim in it, then it's yours. All right, knock yourself out. It's a race. It's a race. First one there gets it, stake your claim, and it's yours. So it's worth it. Then Shlomo HaMelech said it might be worth it. But it's not Hefker. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Shefet. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who hands it out. And what does he do since the creation of the world? He makes ladders for people to go up and people to come down, nations to go up and nations to come down. The one who gets the wealth is not the one who got there first. The one who gets the wealth is the one that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to get the wealth. It's a matona, it's a gift. And the one who keeps it is not the one who got there first. The one who keeps it is the one that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to keep. He wants him to keep it. So therefore, what does it get paid to knock yourself out for? People, they drive themselves crazy, they drive themselves mad, they kill themselves, and they kill their families, and they kill others to get there first.
And then they find out, all of a sudden, it's not theirs. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't have in mind to give it to the person. They turn around one day and it's disappeared. It's flown away. Meanwhile, this other fella, like the Reichmans, he says, we try hard, but we don't try too hard. See? We work hard, but we don't work too hard. We don't try too hard. How did they become so wealthy? They came so wealthy because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted them to become wealthy. And he wanted them to keep it, so they keep it. So this is what Shlomo HaMelech said. And this is what the Medrash brings here. Medrash brings here under B'nai Gad B'nai Reuven. This is in Osvob. Mikne Rav Hoyel B'nai Reuven Lev B'nai Gad. Halocha Shleishu Matonas Nivra Ba'ilam. There were three gifts which Hashem created in the world. If you zocha, if you have a schus for it, in other words, it's for you, then you'll have it. If not, you won't have it. A mosai bizman shein matnis shemai. When will it be yours, these three gifts? When Shemaim wants you to have it. Ubos bekeach haTorah. And it comes to you the way of the Torah. And what are they? Gevura, physical strength, osher, wealth, and chokhmah, wisdom. See, a person is born with a good intelligence. But if they are not gifts given to you by Hashem, by Shemayim, and if they do not come to you through the Torah, and you do not use them for Torah, you do not use them to serve Hashem, no, then they're not gifts. So then the Medrash states, this is what Yirmiyahu said, Al Yishalel Chochma BeChochmosai, that he who has intelligence should not praise himself. He who has physical strength should not praise himself. He who has wealth should not praise himself. Kim bezeish yishalel, he who has fear of Hashem. Now, when these gifts are given to you from Hashem, then they'll remain. If not, they won't. Shonu Rabbeinu, the Rabbeinu say, there were two great wise men in the world. One from Israel and one from the nations of the world. Achitophel from Israel and Bilam from the nations of the world. And both of them were lost from the world. We see two people were given great wisdom from heaven. But they didn't use it properly. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu took it from them. This was one from Israel and one from the nations of the world. Achitophel and Bilam. There were two people that were given as gifts great physical strength. One from Israel and one from the world. Who were they? Shimshon from Israel, Samson from Israel, and Goliath from Umas Elam. They didn't use it properly. Shneam nevdu min Elam, and both of them were lost from the world. Two people were given enormous gifts of wealth. One from Israel and one from the nations of the world. Korach, Israel, Korach was given tremendous wealth. And Haman was given tremendous wealth. Achashverosh gave him all kinds of wealth. He was from the nations of the world. Both of them were lost because they didn't use it as a gift from Hashem. Loma? It wasn't used properly, it wasn't given properly to them. V'chein atomeitzi b'vnei God b'nei Reuven. And so do we find with God in the Reuven. Shoya ashirim. They were very, very wealthy. Hoyele mikna godl. They had enormous herds of cattle and sheep. V'chivavu es memeno. And they had an enormous desire and love for their money. Yoshvalem chutz me Eretz Yisrael, and they chose to stay outside of Eretz Yisrael. Lefichol golut chila mechol hashvotim, and therefore they were exiled before the rest of the shvotim, And this is because they didn't use it. They grabbed it. They were bebohola. They didn't wait to see what was to be their rightful portion, what would have come to them. And they didn't use it properly. Therefore, a person shouldn't run after something. He should walk after something, but not run. If it's meant for him, then he'll get it. If it's not meant for him, then it's worthless. Because even if he gets it, he'll lose it. And he must use it properly. If it's used properly, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give, let him keep and give him more. If it's not used properly, he'll lose it. Many times, not only he'll lose it, but a brocha can become a curse. Here the Bnei God had a brocha. They had a brocha of a great deal of cattle. What did it do? It brought them closer to Hashem. It brought them further away. It states it brought them, it distanced them between they and their brothers. It took them outside of Eretz Yisrael instead of inside of Eretz Yisrael. If not for the cattle, they would have gone into Eretz Yisrael proper. Because of the well, they couldn't go in. So they turned the brocha into a klola. And it distorted their priorities. And at the end, they were exiled first. So this is a very, very important lesson that we all have to learn. Especially the Western culture, which places such priority on material possessions as far as the West is concerned. Who? The one who can grab the most, he has the most. The one who can run the fastest and get there first and put his claim in, he's the one who's going to get it. And this is, they always speak about raising your quality of life. That's the latest statement that's coming out. Enriching your life, raising your quality of life. How do you raise your quality of life? Better home, better video machine, better holidays, and then usually right there, there's an advert, how come to our bank, we'll increase your credit. You know, for 25-30%, we'll increase your credit. To enrich your life, to raise your quality of life. This raising of quality of life can destroy the person's quality of life. Like we see over here. They became all of a sudden millionaires with cattle, and we see how it raised their quality of life. So that's why a person must be very careful. Just like to conclude with a very nice story in Parshas in the Megillas Rush in Yalkei Tshimoni, Siman Tov Reish Zayin. It's a very, very nice story. Ma'aseh b'chosed echad. There was a righteous man, Sheyorad min hachosso. He became very, very poor. He owned a lot of property and he lost it. So v'hoyso ishtek shera, and he had a very righteous wife, a righteous wise wife, and l'seif nasisocha. And he had to, now that he lost his property, he had to go and he had to hire himself out as a worker. Pam echor hayachedish b'sode. One day he was plowing the land. Pogabo Eliyahu b'dmus arav yechod. Eliyahu Hanavi came to him, Elijah, but he was disguised as an Arab. Omale, and he said to this person, he says, Yesh lecho sheishonim teves emosa atom mevakish yisom. He says, I can read the future, and you, he says, I read your future. You have 6 good years coming to you. 6 good years. When do you want them? Do you want them now, or do you want them at the end of your days? Would you like them now or for retirement? What would you like it for? So he said, he says, Kesemato. He says, are you some type of fortune teller? Are you some type of astrologer or a sorcerer? He says, leave me alone. Go in peace. But he kept coming back to him, this Arab. 3 times he came back to him. Couldn't get rid of him. So on the third time when he came back and told him the same thing, he says, all right, wait here. Eilech ve'emlach bi'ishti. I'll go discuss it with my wife. So he went to his wife and he said, this fellow's coming to me and he's bothering me, and I tell him to go, leave me alone, go in peace. And he comes back again. He's come back 3 times, and he says that We are written down for 6 good years, 6 years of wealth and goodness, brocha. And he wants to know, when do we want it, now or later, at the end of our days? So she said, what did you tell him? So he says, I told him I'll go discuss it with you. So she said, all right, go tell him now. So he went back to find the fella, and he said, give it to us now. So he said, Omalei lech lebeischo. He says, all right, you go home now. And before you get to the gate of your house, you will have enough brocha, you will have enough wealth, where you can live for 6 years on that. So he went home. Meanwhile, his children were playing in the sand in the front of the house. And all of a sudden, they came upon a concealed treasure, which was enough to support the family for 6 years. And they called their mother. And this fellow, by the time he got home, his wife comes running out to tell him what happened. So he gave praise to Hashem. He made a celebration. He was happy. He brought back his lands and so forth. Now, what would an average person do? He would start to enrich his quality of life. So his wife said, no, just a minute. She said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has shown enormous chesed to us. He's given us enough money for 6 years. Nasek b'mili gemilis chasodim shonim alolo. For these 6 years, we must do nothing but chesed. We must do kindliness and charity for these 6 years with this money. Shema HaKadosh Baruch Hu meisiv lanu mishalei. And then maybe Hashem will add to it from his own. And so she did. Every day, she made sure to give a lot of charity and do a lot of chesed. And she told her small son, she said, whatever we give away, you must write down and keep track. At the end of 6 years, this Arab pitched up again and came to this man. And he said, the time has come for me to take back what which was given to you. So he said, so the man answered him like this. He says, Kishonal natalti leinatalti lemidas ishti. When I took all of this money from you, I only took it together with after consultation with my wife. So I'm not going to give it back to you without consulting my wife first. So he went, and he went to tell his wife, Kfar Boaz, okay, the old man has come back to take what is his. So Omrele, she said, Lech Emele, go to him and tell him, if you find people who can handle this money better than us, then give it to them. But if not, then leave it with us. V'ro HaKadosh Baruch Hu divrehem. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw what they did. U'gemilas chasodim she'osu. And they saw, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw all of the wonderful goodness they did with this money. V'haysiv lehem tova al tova. And not only did he let them keep the money, but he gave them more. And that's what it means, that the stoker is shalom. So this is a case where HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives and he takes. And someone who uses it properly, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will allow him to keep it and give more. If it's not meant for the person, then he won't have it. Or if it's used not properly, he'll take it away. So we must be very, very careful with this wealth, that it should be for brocha. Many times, wealth was given to a man to bring him closer to Hashem. Unfortunately, tragically, we see people who were close to Hashem until they became wealthy. And with that, they became further from Hashem. And this is what was with the B'nai God and B'nai Reuven, the Chatzi Sheva and Asher. Before they had the cattle, they were closer to Hashem. They were closer to their brothers. They lived together with their brothers. And they had their priorities right. Through this, they were distanced from Hashem. And therefore, they were the ones who lost all of their material possessions and went into exile first. So this is what we can learn from this parsha.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information, or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.yigj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@yigj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.